Hi, everybody. Again, this is Lee Hoffheimer with the Washington State Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And I've got...
I'm Leah Holland. I'm with the Washington Coalition of Sexual Assault Programs.
So we're going to just do a little housekeeping to begin. So we just want to let you know that we're going to be presenting together. Leah and I will be taking turns this afternoon, and we won't be able to respond in real time to everyone's chat, but we're going to have multiple times to stop for questions, and Lee and I will take a look at things and organize it. We're just doing this together on our own. I just want to take a moment and ask, please raise your hand if you're using an interpreter today. If you're using an interpreter today, please raise your hand. Okay, doesn't look like we have any interpreters. Thank you. You all, just to let everyone know, you're on mute right now, but when we pause for questions, we will unmute you. We'll ask you to raise your hand, and then we will unmute you, and we'll also be looking at those questions in the chat box. On ReadyTalk, which is the software we're using, unfortunately, you cannot see everybody else's questions. You'll only be seeing your own. And later on in this call, we also will be showing a video. The sound, if you have computer speakers, the sound will be the best. If you don't, you can still hear it through your phone. And is there anything else about that, Leah, I'm missing?
I don't think so. If you're hearing us over the phone and also want to hear the video on your computer speakers, you can hold the phone away from your ear so you don't hear it twice if that's concerning to you.
Okay. And now we're just going to do a little bit more logistics. So today, if you could please use the chat box to tell us who's on the webinar, especially if you've got people sitting around you, and you can enter their names as well, and we can kind of see some of the programs that are participating. So if you could just enter that into the chat box, that would be great. So we see someone from Legal Voice, Healthy Families of Clallam County,
New Hope, International Rescue Committee, Ferry County, Dayton YWCA,
Walla Walla, API Chaya,
Forks of Youth Program,
Whatcom County.
You guys are going so fast.
Wow, we're going like all over the state. It's pretty cool.
Wow.
Lewiston, Idaho, Lewiston, Clarkson.
Providence Intervention Center, Tacoma Family Justice Center. YWCA Pierce County,
Grays Harbor. So that's great. We've got a lot of people from all over. Ellensburg. Terrific. Next little bit of housekeeping. If you're a WISCATIV member, if you could send Marie, here, her email's here on the slide, the names of all the people attending and listening in with you, this will help us log your training hours. Okay, so we're going to move on to today's training agenda. So why are both coalitions talking about emergency contraception? You know, it's at face value, it's not exactly domestic violence, not exactly sexual assault, but actually it is. You know, for our programs who provide hospital accompaniment to forensic exams, it's beneficial to learn more about having EC in your program because we know not everyone wants to have a forensic exam or go to the hospital or even the pharmacy. We know it's hard for people to get to our program, so having information like this really helps support our forms of survivor-centered advocacy that we do and helps give women in our programs control over their bodies and their lives. We know all of us want to solve problems without increasing harm. We know that the women and girls we work with may have challenges negotiating choices around birth control, their sexuality, their reproductive health. And we don't really know what that looks like, how it's operating, and what we can do about it. And, you know, having EC available may just have been something we haven't really thought about. I know In my own thinking has changed about this, and in my own early training as an advocate when I worked in shelter and on hotlines, we knew where the Planned Parenthoods were, we knew where to send people, but we never really thought about having emergency contraception on site at our program. So we are going to talk about EC a little bit in detail, what it actually is, how to use it, where you can get it. We're also going to talk about stealth birth control, which is our fun way of saying hidden birth control or birth control that can't be interfered with. And we have also a handout that we hope all of you all received in an updated email from Marie today, yesterday, that we're going to talk about a little bit that just talks about giving out over-the-counter medication and how you could share reasons for doing that back at your program. So what happens when someone gets pregnant in an abusive relationship? Just let's take a minute and think about, you know, all the impact having an unintended pregnancy, not necessarily unwanted, but an unintended pregnancy has. So here were just a few of the ideas that Leah and I came up with while we were thinking about it. I'm hoping you all can see this pretty well, but, you know, everything from having to quit your job, needing a bigger apartment, not having health insurance, getting fired, threatening to take children out of the country, pressuring someone to have sex, having to drop out of school, being tied to him even if we want to break up, having to get married to get health insurance. He told me if I loved him, I'd have his baby. He messed with my birth control. And probably you all could think of some more reasons. So we know that there are huge consequences. We might have missed a few. And if you think about a moment, other things that women have told you around the economic impact and repeat pregnancies and even the civil legal impact or her end of her dreams around work or life or education. So we know that having an unintended pregnancy has a really complicated impact that persists. And we understand that when women first come to see us in our programs, they're not necessarily talking about that. The first thing they may be talking about is the most immediate need they have in front of them, housing or just stopping the violence or trying to figure out the next step. And sometimes we have one person who wrote in that in the chat box that sometimes the abuse even escalates. So why, again, so just trying to think about why we want starting to talk about the need for emergency contraception and the need to figure out how to support women having control over their reproductive health and choices brought us to the work of Futures Without Violence. So as you can see in this graphic, that there is a strong linkage between unplanned pregnancies and the increase for women's risk for violence, and violence increases women's risk for unplanned pregnancy. These aren't new problems, but Futures Without Violence provided a framework to look at these issues side by side and consider talking about how coercion and violence impacts the lives of pregnant and parenting women and teens or women who aren't yet pregnant.
I'm going to interrupt real quick. I have one person saying they can't hear the presentation. Can you all, if you can hear us, can you please raise your hand?
Or if you can hear us.
If you can hear us, raise your hands, please. There's a button. Okay. All right. Thank you all. I'm going to lower your hands now. Thanks.
Okay.
Sorry. Thank you.
Sorry. Thank you for the pause. So the issues are strongly linked, but people sometimes don't make the connection between these two issues without a little prompting. So the image shows that these problems are linked. It can go both ways and do go both ways. And it shows why we need to be comfortable understanding what's going on from the healthcare perspective and the advocacy perspective, because reproductive coercion or someone messing with your birth control or pressuring you to be pregnant or pressuring you to end a pregnancy is on the continuum of tactics of violence against women and girls. And we also know that reproductive coercion can be linked to a wide range of other kinds of reproductive health issues, including STDs and HIV transmission, miscarriages, other kinds of risky sexual health behavior. So we just wanted to share with you a little bit. There is some data about that violence against women does increase the risk for unintended pregnancies. There was one of the more recent studies in the year 2000. Women were 2.5 times more likely to experience physical abuse compared to women whose pregnancies were unintended who were intended. So if you are in an abusive relationship, you're more likely to have an unintended pregnancy. And we also wanted to just give you one other little piece of data. So adolescent rapid repeat pregnancy. Again, this might not be new information for advocates, that survivors who may have a tough time negotiating birth control or family planning in an abusive relationship, that they might be more likely to have an unintended pregnancy. But it's pretty impactful to look at the numbers about that young women were nearly twice as likely to have a repeat pregnancy in 24 months. And Lee and I both found this statistic interesting when we were talking to child support enforcement prosecutors, because it kind of helped dispel that myth that they were thinking that, you know, the survivor they were working with or who was asking for a good cause exemption must not be too afraid of their abuser, because not only were they back together, but they were pregnant. And to just show that the person who's living in an abusive relationship is going to not have as much chance to negotiate birth control decisions, and look at how much more likely this can happen for adolescent mothers, kind of help them take a bead and think twice again that maybe the couple's back together is because of coercion. The other information that was really interesting that we thought would be good to share is that there was a study done back in September of 2010 with callers to our National Domestic Violence Hotline. The callers' ages ranged from 13 to 55, over 55, with nearly 40% were aged 25 to 35. More than half the callers were Caucasian, and nearly one quarter were African American, and 17% were Hispanic. So for those who did participate in the study, the patterns included pressure to become pregnant early in the relationship or before the victim felt ready, and in some cases, pressure to become pregnant followed by pressure to have an abortion. Here were some of the quotes from folks who participated in the study. And I'm sure these are things that you all may have heard, too, as advocates in your work, but it's a chance for us to gather some data that we can help share with our coworkers or in building our relationships with healthcare providers and figuring out our connection. So a little bit more data for you. If we look at our own domestic violence fatality review homicide statistics in our state, we just pulled teen victims from 1997 to 2011. It's pretty startling to see that one of the things you get in looking at these statistics are that abusive relationships start early, that 31% of the victims in the reviewed fatality cases were under 21 when they first became involved with abusive partners. Several met in high school or middle school. That having a child in common reinforced abuser's control. In the reviewed cases, 73% of the victims who began dating abusive partners before age 21 had been pregnant or had a child in common with the abuser. And that recent studies also showed that domestic violence is associated with birth control sabotage, coercion to get pregnant, and unintended pregnancy. That's a 2010 study done by Dr. Elizabeth Miller. So we know that education about healthy relationships and dating violence in schools is not sufficient, kind of inconsistent, and often started too late. So another reason that we are talking about this and getting information out there. So kind of our mantra in talking about EC, emergency contraception, and thinking about having it available at our programs is don't ask, just tell. And what we mean by that is we want to offer information about birth control that can't be interfered with. We want to offer information about emergency contraception. We don't want to wait for people to tell us about a disclosure of unprotected sex or sexual abuse or some kind of sexual assault. We just want to let people know we have information about birth control, we have information about emergency contraception, and if somebody wants to know more about it, that we're someone they can talk to early on. And that's different. That's separating that conversation from waiting for a survivor to tell us about sexual abuse or sexual assault that they may or may not tell us or may tell us way down the road. This approach is, let's just put the information out there. It takes a long time for people to get to us sometimes. There may be, you know, the myriad complicated barriers for someone to finally make it through the door, and we could have a really important piece of information that could have a huge long-term impact on her life beyond us. So you can see on the left that we've got pictures of emergency contraception, the packaging, which Leah is going to talk to us about in depth. We've got one more data slide to show you about women's use of emergency contraception, and then we're going to get into that little video we talked about.
Mm-hmm. So I'm showing you this graphic from the CDC, and this is just shows us kind of the increase really quickly of how many women have used emergency contraception, and it has increased over time. It's really, really common for women to use. You can see on the far right that there's also a frequency of use. So most people who have used it either once or twice. Of the women aged 15 to 44, the younger cohort of women aged 20 to 24 were the most likely group of women to have ever used emergency contraception, and about 23% of that group of women had. So we just kind of wanted to make sure that it, you know, really normalized the use of emergency contraception. Almost half of the women used emergency contraception. They reported that they're using it because of fear of a method failure. And then almost half then said they used it because they had unprotected sex. And that was not broken down further based on if that was unprotected, consensual or non-consensual sex. So half because of a method failure and about half because of unprotected sex. So it is very, very common, and we are going to move on to talk about how emergency contraception works. So we have this video, and again, it works over your computer speakers if your computer speakers are working. Otherwise, you should also be able to hear it over the phone.
So what this video is going to be about, it's only a minute and 52 seconds, so it's a very quick overview of how emergency contraception works in the body, and then we're going to break it down and kind of go over some of those concepts again, because it is only a minute and 52 seconds, and you might miss some stuff. So this is how emergency contraception works in the body. Go.
Okay, so short and sweet, how emergency contraception works. So Lee found this video on YouTube, so it is there. And then it's much longer on YouTube. I edited it down for time reasons. It goes over releasing hormones that release eggs and menstruation, just a lot more information than we needed. So for brevity's sake, we did edit it down, but it is available on YouTube. If you search emergency contraception, you should be able to find it. So we're going to break that down a little bit further and talk about how emergency contraception works and the really kind of more specifics of it.
If you can't hear our voices on the computer, on your computer, I would call in with the phone.
But she can't hear us, so she can't hear that. Can you type it? Don't type loud. All right, so what is emergency contraception? So emergency contraception is a high dose of a synthetic progesterone hormone that's found in all birth control methods, all hormonal birth control methods, which include the pill, the ring, the patch, the depot or the shot, the Mirena IUD, the implant. All of those have the same hormone that emergency contraception has. And emergency contraception helps to prevent pregnancy by delaying ovulation and preventing fertilization. So fertilization, like the video showed, is when the sperm meets the egg. Okay, so emergency contraception is very safe and very effective. And can prevent a woman from getting pregnant after she has had sex without using birth control, or that method, she fears that method has failed. There is no evidence that taking emergency contraception before unprotected sex is effective. Nothing says that you should take it beforehand. Just so that's clear.
Well, one thing we forgot to mention at the beginning of this is that I wanted to let you know that Leah actually worked 6 years at Planned Parenthood. So she brings that skill set to our emergency contraception talk. Yay.
So there's two categories of emergency contraception pills available in the United States. On the left side, they are pills that have the hormone progestin in it. And that's that hormone that I just mentioned that is in all hormonal method of birth control. And on the right is a type of emergency contraception that was first approved in Europe. It has a different hormone, olopristyl acetate, and really the hormones in this, it's not going to matter in our day-to-day work, but it's just kind of one of those interesting things that I geek out over. So if any of you are geeking out with me over this, that's rad. So we're going to go into more depth about the specifics of these two categories of emergency contraception pills. We're going to do the progestin only. So we're going to go to the next slide. Okay, so the emergency contraception that has just progestin in it there's a couple of brands of it. Plan B, one step, is a one pill that's taken, that can be taken up to 120 hours after unprotected intercourse. And there's Plan B with two pills. And the packaging in that one was going to tell you to take the pills 12 hours apart, but all of the research that has been done after the FDA approved this has shown that taking both of those pills together at the same time is much more effective than taking the pills 12 hours apart, mostly because people sometimes miss those 12 hours. So the maker of Plan B, Teva, they have stopped actually manufacturing Plan B with the two pills, but there's still maybe some of that type of pill in the various supply chains at clinics and at pharmacies. So you still may see it, but it's going to be going away fairly quickly. Another manufacturer creates Next Choice. There's Next Choice one dose, and there's also a two-pill version. They're generics of Plan B, so they're the exact same thing. They tend to be cheaper. But also that manufacturer is going to be ending the two-pill version of that. There is another manufacturer of emergency contraception. They make another generic type of emergency contraception called levonorgestrel tablets. It is, again, a generic version, and they only create a two-pill version. And I've not heard whether or not they're going to start making a one pill, or if they're going to stop manufacturing of that because of recent court cases. But there, so those are what are the most commonly available emergency contraceptive pills in the United States right now. The other option is called Ella. It is one pill. It is only available by prescription. It has a different type of hormone. The effectiveness of it lasts across the 120 hours. What I didn't mention on the previous slide is that So those previous pills, they have been FDA approved to be taken up to 72 hours, and they're effective at 89% up to 72 hours. They have been proven effective after that, but after the 72 hours, that effectiveness begins to decrease. So with the Ella, the effectiveness of Ella is maintained across those 120 hours. All right, so with Ella, it is a prescription, so it is going to be more expensive because you do need to see a provider, a healthcare provider for that at a clinic or a private doctor, whatever is, whatever your options might be. There has been some initial research that it is more effective for women who are significantly overweight. There was one study done, and we're hoping to see more studies to kind of flesh that out a little bit because it was done based on BMI, body mass index. And for those of you who have know a little bit about body mass index, there's some controversy about it as a measure of weight, which I'm not going to go into right now. We totally don't have time for that. But just kind of putting that on your radar. Ella, because it's prescription only, may be accessible, maybe more accessible during a forensic exam when folks are in the hospital. So if your hospitals are not offering Ella as an option, especially for women who are significantly overweight, it might be an advocacy issue in asking them to stock Ella as an option. So that, and it's definitely less popular, but available. Okay, so again, you can start emergency contraception as soon as possible. That's why we really want folks to have it as accessible. So if that's coming from you all in your programs, or if that's people having it at home, folks who need to hide it, they can take it out of the packaging. The packaging for these things are really big and bright, bold packaging. A box really, really big for just one tiny pill or two tiny pills. So folks that need to hide it, you can take those pills out of the packaging and put them in tiny envelopes to hide them easier. So just kind of one of those things to think about if folks are getting it ahead of time, knowing they may need it later, because it is the most effective taken as soon as possible, and preferably within 72 hours, but you can take it up to 120 hours, which is 5 days. So these are the two websites for Plan B One Step and Next Choice One Dose. So those websites are at the top on that of that heading, and we're going to send these slides out, like we said earlier, as well as this recorded webinar will be on both of our websites. So both websites have countdown clocks on them, so you can put in the date where that unprotected intercourse happened, or where somebody was sexually assaulted, or if they think a method failed, whatever their situation might be, you can put those dates in and use this countdown clock or this calculator to figure out how many hours it's been. But because these products have been only FDA approved for use up to 72 hours, it only has a 72-hour window period to it. So that's kind of the downside of those. The upper left-hand corner of this slide, that is a pharmacy card, where folks want to walk into a pharmacy and ask for emergency contraception, they can do that with more privacy by handing this card to an employee at the pharmacy. This might be helpful if there's confidentiality issues, if it's a small community, and other things, you know, that kind of stuff to think about to give folks a little bit more comfort in accessing emergency contraception from the pharmacy.
But we just want to restate that, Leah, that it's still possible that emergency contraception can work up to that 5-day period, even though the countdown clock here is showing up to 3 days. So you still would have an opportunity. It's still worth trying.
Yeah, absolutely.
So don't be misled by seeing the packaging saying 72 hours and 3 days. Know that you have up to 5 days, 120 hours.
And the 120 hours, I mean, this research was done after the FDA approved these manufacturers to make and sell emergency contraception, so the packaging just hasn't been changed. It may be changed later, it just hasn't happened yet. So really, 120 hours is kind of that benchmark of what you have time for. So what happens if someone takes emergency contraception but they get pregnant anyway? Because I said earlier, emergency contraception at most the most effective it can get is about 89%. So sometimes it doesn't work. But if you take it and you get pregnant anyway, that medication does not harm that embryo. And it does not increase any risks or complications to if you choose to continue that pregnancy to full term after taking emergency contraception. So we just wanted to kind of touch on the differences between emergency contraception and the abortion pill, because some folks, there's still some kind of misunderstanding out there and some myths about emergency contraception that it causes an abortion, but it doesn't. These are two very, very different medications that you take at different times for different reasons. So emergency contraception prevents pregnancy. You take it up to 5 days after unprotected sex. And we talked about the names of these, Plan B, Next Step, Ella, also called the morning after pill. Whereas the abortion pill, it ends a pregnancy and you can take it up to 9 weeks after you have a positive pregnancy test. So you actually need to have that positive pregnancy test before you have access to those medications from your doctor. Most commonly in the United States, the abortion pill is also known as a medication abortion. The names of the drugs are Mifeprex and Mifepristone. In Europe, it was called RU46. That's heard less often here, but it's still kind of floating around a little bit.
And I can tell you, I found this conversation I have with Leah really helpful because, you know, we talked about this, you know, around our office, and everybody in theory is like, yes, emergency contraception, great, but how is it really different? How does it really work? So it was really helpful to have that clarity.
Okay, so common side effects from taking emergency contraception. Here's the list of them. There will be a change in your menstrual cycle, which is normal. It's a good thing. You want that to happen because you want bleeding to happen within 2 weeks after taking emergency contraception. That's kind of the benchmark for how you know it worked. It could be a totally normal period, but it could also come earlier or later than you would expect it, or it could be heavier or lighter. But that bleeding is really important. If there is no bleeding after 2 weeks, you should take a pregnancy test. And some pregnancy tests that you can buy from the pharmacy are effective and accurate after 2 weeks. But if there's a higher level of concern, most clinics' urine pregnancy tests are effective at that 14-day mark. And somebody can just take a pregnancy test at that 2-week mark as well just to make sure, because anybody, regardless of their situation, whether they're in a DV relationship or if they experience sexual assault, that there's that anxiety that comes with having to have taken emergency contraception and really wanting to know it worked. So your benchmark for when to take that pregnancy test is going to start at that 2-week point. So the rest of these side effects, the nausea, fatigue, headache, dizziness, lower abdominal pain, which is actually cramping like you would have with your period when you're bleeding, which kind of makes sense, right? Because these are all breast tenderness sensitivity. These are all some of the symptoms that women have when they're when they know their period is about to start. So these are all just kind of normal body reactions to when you're going to bleed. Most people do really, really well taking this. Most people have very little side effects taking this. But there are some people who have really, really are really sensitive to taking synthetic hormones. So they may have more side effects from taking emergency contraception, but not in a way that is dangerous or will harm them in any way. If you have any kind of reaction like you would for any other medication, you're going to go to the ER, right? If you have any rashes, you have difficulty breathing, just like any other thing, you take yourself to the emergency room. If you take emergency contraception and you vomit within 2 hours of taking it, you're going to need to retake it. We'll go back. sorry, I just wanted to just touch on the expiration dates, because us, the coalition, we really want folks to start the conversation at their programs about having emergency contraception in their desk drawers. So one thing to make sure to check on is the expiration dates in the packet, and those generally run 2 to 3 years by the time you get them from the pharmacy. All right, so everywhere, any provider that you hear, they're going to tell you how safe emergency contraception is. It is safer than aspirin. All right, and there is actually one more form of emergency contraception that is not a pill. The copper IUD, which is called Paragard, also acts as emergency contraception. It does have, you do need to have a doctor to insert it. It can get quite expensive. It can run generally $500 to $900, but then once it's in, it can last for 12 years as one of the most effective methods of birth control. So the way that this IUD works, it irritates the lining of the uterus and affects the way the sperm move, making it really difficult for them to move up into the upper parts of the uterus and into the fallopian tubes where it would typically join with the egg if there was an egg there. So it really kind of stops the sperm in its tracks. It creates a really hostile environment for sperm so that egg and sperm can't meet. So it does require a doctor to insert in an office. And it's quite effective as a form of emergency contraception and as a birth control method. It is over 99% effective to prevent pregnancy. And it doesn't, just like Ella, there's no issues around folks who are significantly overweight. But it takes a little bit more kind of awareness that's available, as well as access to insurance. So any insurance that covers birth control methods should cover an IUD, as well as in Washington State. I'm not sure how many folks are from outside of Washington on the call right now, but if you are in Washington State, our Medicaid program, as well as Take Charge, which is a birth control coverage insurance, they both will cover this method of birth control as well.
Okay, so we're actually going to take a minute now and give you a chance to send us some questions in the chat box, and Leah and I will look at them as they come in and try to do a little organizing.
We are going to move, at the next slides we're going to talk about accessing emergency contraception and age restrictions, the kind of legal stuff behind this. But first, before we move into that, we really wanted to know if there were any other stuff that we didn't touch on about emergency contraception, any of the things that, like, hey, I heard this was true, but I'm not really sure if it's a myth or a fact that we can look at for you. So these are the kind of stuff that we're looking for. So there's a question about if we're going to discuss more about what's involved in non-healthcare providers offering EC. Absolutely, that's going to come towards the end of our slides. Requirements for getting an IUD. Some providers like folks to be menstruating. You do not have to be. They will typically do a pregnancy test because if you insert an IUD, if you're pregnant, it can cause a miscarriage. There are some providers want recent pap smears, that kind of stuff. So if you haven't had that, it could be a barrier to getting it on time. Also, getting a doctor's appointment within the time frame, within those 5 days, is also can be an issue. So it's not necessarily the most accessible way to use EC.
Someone asked, how soon after unprotected sex do you need to insert the IUD?
It's still that 72-120 hours.
And, yeah, Megan, we are going to talk about the age, the lifting of the age restrictions and packaging in a little bit.
Cool. Really, really, really good questions, you guys.
Yes. Anything else?
All right. We're going to keep going.
So, age restrictions are changing for emergency contraception. This is really hot off the press. So as of June 10th, the government withdrew its appeal for age restrictions. So what that's going to mean eventually is that there will be no age restrictions for purchasing emergency contraception. It'll be available on the shelf, not behind the pharmacist counter. So if your pharmacy is stocking it, we'll talk about that a little bit later too.
Mm-hmm.
It will be available. So there should be a greater ease and going in there, going into Rite Aid, Walmart, Walgreens, any of the places you like to go, and be able to purchase emergency contraception. Okay, so reality check, that's not going to be happening yet because the labeling and the packaging does have to change. Right now, for folks who are 17 and older, they can purchase emergency contraception without a prescription, and they will also need an ID. For young women under 17, they are going to need a prescription and an ID. So until we see that manufacturer's packaging changed, that's really what's going to be happening. And we're going to talk a little bit more about where you get emergency contraception from pharmacies, clinics, if a prescription is needed, your health care provider, hospital, Planned Parenthood, other kind of reproductive health service places. But that, so that's, it's really amazing news that the age restrictions are being lifted.
There's a question about, do you have a ballpark of when packaging will be updated? It's really dependent on a few things. First, the maker of Plan B One Step, Teva, has to submit an application to the FDA. The FDA then has to approve it, which they said they would do quickly. They've already promised this. So then Teva has to redo their labeling and packaging and get this product back into the supply chain with pharmacies. So it really is dependent on how fast the pharmacy company does that, so the pharmaceutical company does that. It also depends on how quickly individual pharmacy chains purchase it, as well as individual pharmacies, how fast they overturn their stock. There's some pharmacies may not carry it until they sell out completely of their other stock that is just for 17 and older without a prescription. So it's one of those advocacy things, again, of making sure that you contact the pharmacies in your community and find out when they expect this to happen and kind of letting them know that it really should happen quickly because it's a need in their community. And if they tell you, hey, you know, we've got three left, we're waiting to sell them, you know what? See if you've got some funding available to go buy those three packs to force them to renew their stock.
So I just wanted to respond to the one of the questions that came through. Is there a law saying that we have to wait for the new labels, or why can't we use the old label? Why can't they use the old labels? That's a really good question. That's a question that Leah and I have asked Legal Voice to maybe give us a little help in researching. So that would be a good advocacy strategy that we could put back out to you. We're trying to find out if there is any statewide law or regulation that would tell pharmacies that they have to sell EC without age restrictions despite the labeling being unchanged, but we don't have the answer to that yet, so that's why we called it reality check. We don't totally know that answer yet, but if we find out, we'll definitely, we're going to have an email list of everyone who signed up for the call. We'll send that information out. And then we see a comment from Carla saying they checked over all over her area to find out where Plan B was being sold, and they were told by one pharmacy that they were going to restrict access because young males were coming in and purchasing all they had. Now they allow only one dose per customer. Do we have any guess why guys are buying it up?
So with the changes for accessing emergency contraception, it became available to both men and women. So things that are require a prescription for is only for the person who is going to use it. Whereas when things start happening over the counter and no longer need a prescription, then anyone within that age range restriction at this point can buy it. Why they're buying it, I don't know. It might be that their girlfriend needs it and wanted five packs because they need one now. But hey, let's not have to go to the pharmacy first thing in the morning again, and have four packs available in case the condom breaks again. It could be that they had a bunch of friends, get together and be like, oh my gosh, we should all have one of these in our medicine cabinet. So hey, dude, we're embarrassed to go get it. Why don't you go get it? Or hey, dude, we're 16. We can't get it yet. You go get it because you're 17. I am speculating about a whole host of issues about why guys are buying this in bulk. So I don't really know, but it's also interesting that the pharmacy is restricting access, and we're going to talk about kind of advocacy steps to take if you see this happening in your community.
Thank you for that segue.
You're welcome.
Okay. So here's some of the advocacy kind of strategies to keep in mind to make sure emergency contraception is available in your community. In our state, all pharmacies are required to stock emergency contraception to meet the needs of their community. That's language from our WAC, which I could tell you if you needed that exact WAC. So how do you meet the needs? You ask for it. So it's literally if you go into your local pharmacy and you don't see it, you say to the pharmacist, I want it. I want it here, and I understand that if the community asks for it, you're supposed to be stocking it. Currently, now this is just in our state again, then this is current. This could change. If a pharmacist doesn't want to dispense or sell EC due to religious objections or anything else, someone else in the pharmacy must do it. And we have a WAC code for that, too. As Leah said earlier, be aware a pharmacy will probably want to sell off their old stock unless we ask for the new product. And, you know, and sometimes in the future we're thinking that they might put emergency contraception in a glass case in the same way they do alcohol or condoms or razors because they're expensive.
Right, for theft reasons.
For theft reasons. But Legal Voice does want to hear from us, our programs. I can tell you, Janet Chang at Legal Voice wants to know, Janet Chang, if a pharmacy is stocking EC but won't sell it once it's been requested or won't sell it to a man. They do want to know. So
like Carla's question here about if they're restricting access just to one, that we should also be flagging for Legal Voice because there should be no restricting how many you get. However, if people are continually buying bulk amounts, it does affect then people who need that dose right away if they don't have it in stock. So they're going to have to wait then for a shipment from their suppliers to come in. So that whole supply chain issue can get messed up. But if pharmacies are seeing folks buying it five at a time, then they should be increasing their stock and supply instead of restricting access for folks who are wanting to purchase it.
So it's another reason why, you know, we could be thinking about our programs of having a few packages on stock in our program, whether it's at the shelter or the CAP office or, you know, anywhere. So, again, we're going to have a place where we're pausing if people want to type in questions for us about age restrictions or where to get it or... Give people a moment. What we're going to move into next is we're going to talk about, you know, again, as we said at the beginning of this conversation, it's really offering information to folks coming into our program about emergency contraception, about the availability of it, about pregnancy tests, and about hidden forms of birth control or birth control that can't be interfered with. Just letting people know you've got information about those things can really open the door to richer conversations.
So we have a couple of questions about pharmacies carrying it. One wants to know if it's carried at Costco. They should be. If there's a need in the community, they should be. And the very best way to find out which pharmacies is to start calling around. And that way you can also call around and see if they're selling Plan B, if they're selling Next Choice or levonorgestrel tablets, and what the cost is so that you know what to tell survivors as far as what to expect for cost if you're not going to carry it, if you're not going to offer it in your agencies. And let them know which is the least expensive way to go, as well as it will let you know. It might give you a little heads up to which pharmacies you might need to do additional advocacy work around if they get a little less cooperative, I guess, about dispensing emergency contraception.
And you might be able to build a relationship with a pharmacy or a clinic or a public health clinic or a hospital where they would sell you or let you purchase emergency contraception and pregnancy tests at cost. So it would be cheaper for you all just to have a few line item in your budget, you know, $100 worth of emergency contraception or pregnancy tests. So it's an opportunity. I've called, for example, I called Walmart in Othello because I was heading out to Othello and I was just curious to know if Walmart sold it or not, and it did. How young can you be to use it? Just one person's asking again. So right now, so the reality is the law has changed that there shouldn't be any age restrictions for purchasing emergency contraception. But the reality is right now, people men and women 17 and older can purchase emergency contraception with ID, but they do not need a prescription. Women under the age of 17 are going to need a prescription to purchase EC. So there is that time lag for, I don't know if the person who asked the question has been on all the call, but eventually when the manufacturing and the labeling catches up to the changes in the law, there will be no age restrictions and no what is called point of sale restrictions, so you won't need an ID, you won't need to ask the pharmacist, it won't be locked away behind the counter. It should be right there available for folks to be able to purchase. Okay, so now we're going to move on to talking about what we call stealth birth control, or those hidden forms of birth control, or birth control that's less likely to be interfered with. We just love our Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman with her stealth jet, the invisible jet. So this is, you know,
yeah.
Shout out to, you know, feminist icons. So stealth birth control, like Lee said, these are forms of birth control that are less likely to be messed with by a partner. So it's another harm reduction strategy that we can talk to survivors about and talk to healthcare providers in your area about. If you're working with survivors who are dealing with various forms of reproductive coercion. So there are a few options. The best one right now is the Paragard IUD. All IUDs can be stealth to some extent. The big issue, though, with the other two types of IUDs, Mirena and Skyla, is that they do have a lower dose of hormones that get released when it's inserted into the uterus. So when those hormones are released, it can stop the woman from menstruating, from having a period. And so if that abuser is tracking that survivor's period and menstrual cycle, then it's not really considered a stealth method or really hidden. But if that woman, because this can also come up in LGBTQ relationships too, right? So if somebody is having a period tracked, those two bottom, the Mirena and Skyla IUDs, are not considered stealth. So Paragard IUD, it does not stop bleeding, and your bleeding can either stay the same, but sometimes it can get a little bit heavier and cramps can get a little bit worse. But for most people who use it, it's not enough to make it a huge discomfort. So for these to be stealth, the provider, when inserting the IUD, does have to remove the strings from the IUD. So these strings that are tied to the bottom of the IUD that come out of the cervix, and you can feel if you put your fingers into your vagina or a penis is in your vagina, those strings can be felt. And that's what the provider uses to remove the IUD whenever that patient wants it removed, whether it's because it has reached its shelf life of effectiveness or because that person wants to get pregnant or switch methods of birth control. So if that provider removes those strings and inserts the IUD, then the partner can't feel it with fingers or with the penis or anything like that, and then it's truly hidden form of birth control. It does make removal of the IUD a little bit more difficult, and that's something to talk with providers about who's most comfortable doing that, and if they're not, how do we work with them to get trained up on how to remove an IUD without the strings attached?
I always thought Leah had a good practical recommendation with that. I mean, when you're checking out providers who say they insert IUDs, you know, obviously a place like Planned Parenthood, there's going to be someone who's doing it a lot, but it's like perfectly okay and worth asking, how often do you put these in? How often do you take them out? Because it isn't a big deal for someone who does it all the time. It's just a bigger deal. It's just a little bit of a deal for somebody who doesn't.
Yeah. One of the risks of having an IUD inserted is to have the uterus perforated or poked through by that device that's inserting the IUD. And that is a higher risk if that provider is less experienced in inserting an IUD versus someone who does it all the time. So if your survivor's regular doc doesn't really do that very often, you might want to call around to find somebody else who's a little bit more comfortable. So for both the Mirena...
But that's kind of rare, right? Perforation of the IUD?
Totally rare, yeah.
I mean, of the uterus.
Yeah, it's definitely rare. It does not happen often at all. But when they studied, you know, who was getting perforated and why, it was more about the provider than anything about the patient. So for Paragard and Mirena, these can be inserted in really anyone. But again, so there's this whole FDA approval issue. So when the FDA approved these methods, they only approved them to be inserted on women who have given birth. But they can also be inserted in women who have never given birth or never even been pregnant. But some providers aren't really up to date on reproductive health technology and don't know that. So to reduce barriers about this issue with providers who are not up to date on recent changes about birth control, the maker of Mirena also created an additional IUD called Skyla, which is specifically created to use in women who've never given birth. Now, that doesn't mean a provider is going to start using that one exclusively with women who've never given birth, but now it just kind of triggers those providers. They're like, oh, there's now an option for women who've never given birth. So it's really a lot like Mirena. It's just got a shorter timeline to use. So the Skyla has been approved for use up to 3 years. The Mirena has been approved for use up to 5 years, and the Paragard can be used up to 12 years. So these are called long-acting reversible contraceptives, and they are upwards of 99% effective. And so that long-acting, that really kind of lets folks let go of that worry of getting pregnant. That can be overwhelming for some people, especially if they really, really don't want to get pregnant. And there is a big push among folks who work with youth to get a lot of younger women, teens and young adult women, to get IUDs inserted because there's a really high level of birth control failure when you look at folks who don't use other forms of birth control in correct ways. So we overcome that by offering birth control that that you don't have to think about once it's really inserted. Another long-acting reversible contraceptive is Implanon. It's an implant. It goes in the inner arm just under the skin. It's also inserted at the doctor's office. It releases hormones over 3 years and can also stop someone from menstruating altogether. So this is slightly less stealthy than the Paragard IUD because it stops your period, but also for some people you can see that implant underneath their skin. Some people you can't, but for most people you can actually feel it if you touch the inner part of their arm. So if that abuser, you know, grabs an arm and can feel that, or just, you know, just regular touching of your partner and they can feel it, then it's not hidden. But if they're not worried about the abuser trying to take that implant out of them, which it could happen, and it would be a pretty big deal, then that would not necessarily be a good option, but it is definitely one that's less able to be messed with. The Depo-Provera shot is an injection that a woman will get every 90 days. It stops menstruation. It stops ovulation as well. So every 90 days, and so you have to go back to the doctor every 90 days to get this shot. So if there's issues accessing transportation to get to the doctor's office to get the shot, that can be a barrier for folks. Also, it does stop the period, so again, tracking menstrual cycles, it can be an issue. But again, unless that person is being restricted from physically going to the doctor's office, it's not one that can be messed with. But it's really important to make sure you hit those 90 days, because if you miss your 90-day mark to get your next shot, then you have a higher risk of becoming pregnant. But all three of those are really, really effective methods of birth control. So those are the ones that are considered stealth or hidden methods of birth control available on the market right now. And for information about all the rest of the forms of birth control, which we don't really have time to go over today, both PlannedParenthood.org's website as well as Bedsider.org, and it's on those slides in front of you, are really great resources for looking at methods of birth control, how effective they are, pros and cons to using them, other things to think about, cost, all of that kind of stuff. They have a bunch of stuff on those websites. They're really user-friendly. They're written in really, really easy ways to understand. So if you have not already checked out those websites, I would highly recommend visiting those.
All right, we're going to pause for a second. Anyone have questions about the birth control methods that Leah just went over? Give you a second to put something in the chat box. Anything that was confusing?
Let's see. Yeah, so we're asked, will there be an opportunity for conversation on pros and cons of providing this at the agencies, i.e. liability? Absolutely. We're actually going to move into that part of the presentation in just a couple of minutes. And then at the end of the presentation, we're going to ask for any feedback, and we'll give everybody an opportunity. We can unmute phones and have folks actually start talking. But yeah, we're going to definitely go into like, what does it mean if I have this in my desk drawer because I can't give out Tylenol and this is starting to freak me out, you guys. So we're going to go into that, unless anybody else has another question right now.
Okay. Looks like there are no more questions right now. So if you all want to check your inbox, and look for an email from Marie@wiskative.org, there's a handout that we're about to go over that we're going to address why, you know, some of these questions we have. What are the pros and cons of providing emergency contraception on site? It's a frequently asked questions about making over-the-counter medication available and our domestic violence. I'm going to skip to this one first.
Okay. Double click it.
This is what the handout title is. Can our DVSA dual advocacy programs make over-the-counter medication, pregnancy tests, and emergency contraception available to women and their children using our program services? So, yes, the good news is we can remove barriers and provide women access to over-the-counter medication for themselves or their children. We've just put some notes in here to remind you that the law did change, but we're still waiting for that manufacturing and labeling changes. So let's just go back a second.
May I answer this question real quick? So there's a question about the implant. So I had just mentioned, I didn't really mention it being taken out. The implant needs to be taken out by a doctor, medical provider at a clinic or a private doctor at the 3-year mark or sooner if that person wants to get pregnant or switch birth control methods, but it does require a doctor's visit. And if the person is worried that their abusive partner will actually take that implant out of them, then that's not really a good method of birth control to use because that person would actually have to cut it out of them, which is not good, kind of horrifying actually. So that's kind of just what I mentioned about that. If that abuser is really, really severely violent,
that birth control could still be possibly interfered with.
Yeah.
And I understand we're going to collect the emails of everyone who registered. I had one person say they did not receive the document from Marie, and we can get that out to you. So just in kind of framing, so what Lee and I wanted to do is just spend a little bit of time talking through what would be some of the reasons and conversations you could have with your coworkers about why it would be a good idea to have emergency contraception, pregnancy tests available on site. So we know common reasons to use emergency contraception for anyone, whether you're experiencing abuse or not. These are some of the common reasons why people use it. And you can probably think of some others. Now, let's say you're experiencing abuse or you're in a relationship where your decisions aren't respected around reproductive health, around sexuality, around birth control. Some of those reasons could be messing with your birth control, pressuring you, forcing you to have unprotected sex, threatening to leave you, pulling out your IUD, poking holes in a condom, poking holes in a diaphragm.
Flushing birth control. Is that messing with birth control pieces?
All those pieces. And we can even think about this as part of, you know, as we said earlier, too, safety planning. When somebody's leaving our program or checking out their program, to ask them, do they have birth control that they feel comfortable using? Do they have birth control that they feel like they can use? Do they need some information about other forms of birth control? So if you've had this conversation and put it out there early on, like at intake, that you've got information about it, it's going to be easier to have this conversation as a part of safety planning. So getting to this handout, so this is kind of what the front of it looks like. And so what we hoped that you might be able to go back and talk with your fellow with coworkers about, or your supervisor, or people who make decisions about what you give out, because we got feedback from programs we've been working with that, hey, we don't even give out Advil or aspirin. How can we give out EC? So some of the rationale behind it is that we're offering a tool to someone, or we're offering medication to someone. You know, the example we give, if you have the handout in front of you, is you offer someone a first aid kit to someone who's cut themselves, and then the adult chooses whether or not to use what you're offering. You're not ordering them to use a Band-Aid. You're just offering it by letting folks know you have Tylenol or aspirin or cough syrup or pregnancy tests or emergency contraception. You're providing information. You're not directing somebody. You're not telling them they have to use it. I think another term that gets really conflated is people talk about dispensing medication. Dispensing is a particular legal term and refers to prescription drugs. Letting someone know you have over-the-counter medication available that they might need is not the same thing as dispensing medication. Again, a survivor, a woman, is choosing to give her child Tylenol. It's her choice. Under our WACs in our state, domestic violence and dual programs are neither prohibited nor directed to make over-the-counter medication available to our program participants. Our WACs do require us to have a secure way to store medications with immediate access for the program participant. So there isn't anything that says you can't give it, you can't make this available. And, you know, if we think about the third thing, controlling, if we're trying to have survivor-centered programs, we want to do everything we can to support the survivor's decision-making, including letting her decide what over-the-counter medication she may want or not want. And that's, you know, that's part of why our WAC specifies that individuals must have secure storage and ready access to their medications, because survivors should be in control of their own and their children's medicine. We don't want to make it difficult for folks. And we want to really offer a full range of options for people responding to abuse. And as we said, the timeliness of emergency contraception is so important. You know, you, by the time that person gets to you, they could still be in that five-day window or not. And if they don't even know that it's available, they, you know, they're losing more time. So just in the same way you'd make a Band-Aid available or an ACE bandage or ice for a wound, for an owie. I hit my head. I need ice for that owie. You're increasing the ease with which the survivor can make choices about things that impact her life beyond her interaction with your own program. So that's some of the reasoning behind it that you can go back and talk with folks about. And then we got some examples of what people are doing right now in their programs. Some people provide sample sizes of Tylenol, ibuprofen, and give it out. Some people have a large size and ask people to take what they need and return it. We know of right now that we know for a fact two programs, Dawn, which is in Renton in King County, and New Hope, which is a dual program over in Othello and Moses Lake. They both offer emergency contraception and pregnancy tests on site, and they just give people information about it when they come in as part of intake. Just say, hey, we've got it here. If you want to talk about it more, we can. They don't wait for someone to ask, do you have a pregnancy test or do you have emergency contraception? I know many of programs right now, I think, offer individual lock boxes for storage for over-the-counter medication or prescription medication. And, you know, you may have some other examples that you could, we'd love to hear about it if you wanted to throw them into the chat box. Anyone do anything differently?
And while people are doing that, part of that letting participants know that pregnancy tests and emergency contraception are available on site is not necessarily asking, have you had unprotected intercourse or were you raped in the last 5 days? Because as advocates, we know that when we work with folks, it takes a while for a lot of survivors to really disclose that the sexual abuse they've experienced in a DV relationship. So this is not trying to force them to disclose things they're not ready to disclose to us. This is really just being upfront. Like, we know a lot of women experience a whole host of issues related to sex in their relationships. So we make sure everybody who comes in knows that we have emergency contraception available, and if you need it, here's where it's kept. You can take it 5 days after unprotected intercourse, as well as there's pregnancy tests available. So really not, you don't have to dig to find answers to those questions about whether if someone needs it or why they need it, but really just making sure that they really do know that it is available and where it's kept.
That's why our mantra is like, don't ask, just tell. Mm-hmm. Because we're really trying to separate the questions. We're really trying to separate offering information about emergency contraception, pregnancy tests, and birth control from asking someone to disclose whether they've experienced unprotected sex or sexual abuse. That can come later. Just figuring out a prompt that you feel comfortable with is a part of your intake. Hey, a lot of women worry about these issues, or just want to let you know, as Leah said, we've got the stuff available. Just something that won't even take you 30 seconds to say. Just kind of breaks the ice and gets it out there. I know one of the Dawn program advocates told me that by doing that at intake, it really led to setting the stage in support group to have a much richer conversation about getting into relationships, having sex. What do you tell your kids about sex? What do you tell your teenagers about sex? Do people have birth control they feel comfortable with? It just sort of normalized that conversation and really opened up a discussion that people didn't have to get over that hump of later and that awkwardness. So we're really trying to separate those two issues.
And some folks, when we were talking to people about how to start asking these, or, you know, offering these things and start these conversations, that there was an awkwardness in that initial part for an advocate when you first start doing it, which is really normal. And one of the advocates at Dawn had said, well, you know, I kind of started somewhere else. I started asking, have you had a pap smear recently? Do you have a doctor that you like? Do you need a doctor? Can we help you figure out who the best person to go to is? And that felt like that was an easier entry into that conversation. And as a result of asking it that way, she actually had somebody who had gone through menopause, wasn't able to get pregnant, so birth control and EC wasn't an issue. However, her partner had intentionally been exposing her to STDs. So that's a really great way to bring this conversation up, because then you're also making sure that folks who can't get pregnant, whether because of menopause or they've had their tubes tied or whatever, that you're also making sure that you're reaching them and that their healthcare needs are also being met.
So we just want to take a second for people to sit with this and ask you all, you know, what do you think? Like, what do you think might come up at your program? What do you think? Do you think there'll be any pushback? Do you think people will be like, yay, just hadn't thought about this before? Or we're already doing it. And tell us who's doing it now.
So what we can do, you can either type your questions in the chat box, or if you want to ask it over the phone, if you raise your hand, we can unmute your line. And then you can ask the question. We're going to ask that when we unmute your line, if you say your name and where you're calling from, we can do it that way, too. So we have both options available.
So there's one question. Any suggestions about agencies can find the money to purchase EC? So a couple of things. So this is new in the sense that, you know, I think it's something we have to budget for, like we budget for interpreters and everything else. And I don't think you have to budget a huge amount. I think you could start small. Lee and I have talked to a lot of programs that they start with, like, you know, 3 or 4 packs and just see what's mm-hmm. happening. Talking to the providers in your community to see if they would sell it to you at cost.
Another option is, if you have a list of donation needs, is adding pregnancy tests and emergency contraception to your list of donation needs and asking community folks to donate it. If you have a really good relationship with Planned Parenthood, that kind of stuff, they may even donate it. It just kind of depends and about kind of what your community looks like and what relationships you have existing and what might need to be formed to do this. When I was a program manager in a dual agency, I was able to get a small family foundation grant specifically for safety planning costs. So we were able to change locks for folks, move folks, that kind of thing, get broken windows replaced. It was a really small pot of money, but if I were in a place that like the laws had changed, which they hadn't yet, but that pot of money I would have also used to purchase emergency contraception and pregnancy tests, because that also falls under safety planning costs.
That makes me think of like the money the creative things people have been doing with their Housing First money.
Yes.
And meeting the needs of advocates. All right, so, I mean, meeting the needs of survivors, excuse me. So regarding state funding, can emergency contraception be covered by state or federal funds?
So in Washington State, someone who has Medicaid and PIG charge, they can get that actually for free themselves if they want to. I don't know as far as funding from funders, like your grants, I don't know that it's specifically prohibited, but I also don't know that it's necessarily allowed. So that might be a conversation that you have to push up your own levels of decision makers up to the funders if you want.
One thing to keep in mind with Take Charge, though, Take Charge is not available for undocumented folks.
Right.
So and then I see someone said, oh, I'm sorry.
I'm just going to address this liability issue. So really, that liability issue is that the dispensing versus offering. If you're offering it to someone and they know how to access it and you keep your medications safe so that kids can't access them, so, you know, that like
lock
that lockbox issue, then there's not really a liability issue there because you're just letting folks know it's available. Just like they could walk into the pharmacy and buy it, but we're removing that cost barrier to them and any other, like, access barriers by having it available. There is not that liability issue. Same thing with Tylenol and cough drops and that kind of thing.
And I think, remember, the wording in this question is dispensing. We're not dispensing anything because dispensing is a legal term that refers to prescription medication. But I see that the person who wrote the question said it's something that they'll have to convince leadership about. And we're happy to brainstorm with you more later, anybody wants to, about convincing leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a question. If a client starts asking questions, the advocate is asking medical kinds of questions, what do you suggest? Well, I mean, I think part of it is like to think about emergency contraception the way we also think about Advil and Tylenol and other things. I mean, if someone started asking us our basic understanding of emergency contraception, which we're all gaining information about, it's a hormone, synthetic hormone in your body, how it works. If there are questions beyond that, like I'm worried I might be allergic to Tylenol or I'm worried I might be allergic to ibuprofen, well, you would encourage someone to check that out. But I'm not sure what medical question they might ask you that you feel like you couldn't answer.
But you can sit with them at a computer, right, and go to the Planned Parenthood website and read all their information about emergency contraception and see if that answers their question, or the bedsider.org website, do the same thing. Or you could call a local, like if you have a relationship with a public health nurse that comes into your agency, you can call them. You can have them call a healthcare provider or call Planned Parenthood if they have additional questions that you feel like you can't answer. Because, again, we know that we're not asking you to give medical advice, just like we would never ask you to give legal advice. But if they have really a kind of larger breadth of concerns that are bigger than what's on Planned Parenthood or Bedsider's website, then you should probably have them call somebody. And it might be a good idea for you to also get that answer, just to kind of tuck it into your back pocket so you know that answer. But if it really is a kind of one of those really big, scary medical questions, then a phone call to the provider is always the right thing to do.
I mean, I think what Leah brought up about public health, it's a way if you've got a public health clinic at all close to you or a community clinic close to you, they have someone that might be willing to come and do an in-service again for staff just about emergency contraception, if that's what people would like. It's an opportunity for relationship building. We're reading a question, a longer question right now. Someone lives in a small, rural, isolated community. It would take about 3 seconds for the information that EC is available at the local DVSA agency and may affect local sources of funding. Agencies should consider the impact on their ability to provide all services while considering the liability issues. I think that's a really good question. I mean, I think that's a really good comment and something people have to think about if you think you would become known as the place you can go get free emergency contraception at. But I think that is something you I think what we have to keep in mind is that for folks who actually get to our door and who are eligible for your services and are using your services, you're actually providing access to something that can change people's lives. So, you know, it would be really interesting to keep thinking about the impact of that if that's what happened in your community and how you all could figure out how to support with maybe help from others,
Figure
out how to support that need. And I know Lee and I would really be interested to know if that's happening, if all of a sudden, you know, 20 people came to your door and they were actually also eligible for your services. What would that be telling us,
right,
too?
Right.
You know, that's really interesting to think about.
Because you do want to keep it also, like, really in line with service provision, right? Are they survivors? Do they need the service, that part of it as well? This next question, our Walgreens said it's about $48, including tax. Is that approximately the rate others have found? It really depends. It can run from $10 to $70 without a prescription. If you need a prescription, it's going to be even more because you have to pay for that doctor's visit sometimes. So around $50 seems to be pretty normal. I know at Group Health it's about $26. Planned Parenthood does work on a sliding scale for folks who don't have insurance, don't want to bill insurance because that explanation of benefits either goes to a partner or a parent. And if you're undocumented and don't have any kind of other access to insurance, that Planned Parenthood does work on a sliding scale. So it can go as low as 10, so it just depends. Also, I think I forgot to mention, actually, that on that planbonestep.com website, they also have a $10 off coupon. I don't know if it's something that's always up there or if it's they put it up, you know, for 3 weeks every month or something, but that's also a place to check for coupons for Plan B.
So we have someone also ask if there are resources developed already to talk about training staff on talking about EC with survivors. Well, I can give you a couple. So at our upcoming conference, there's actually going to be a workshop done led by Andrea Payne from Dawn. She's the director of programs there. Their project on talking about what happened when they started telling people about emergency contraception, asking about reproductive coercion and how it really worked at their program. And one of the things Leah and I did is we came and did a training with staff about how to talk about it. So some of the information that's in this webinar you have now, but then some other information that was more practical about just like having the conversation. So Leah and I are keep refining that little talk and talking about how to do that. We've done that in different versions. So if you all are interested in us talking with your agency, like doing a little in-service and just really focusing on the practical aspect of like, okay, so how are we going to talk about this and giving folks a chance to practice, we'd be interested in knowing about that.
Also, there are Dawn has been gracious and let us they have their adjusted intake forms that we can share as well that
include prompts of how to start the conversation, questions you could ask. So we could share with you Dawn's. If anybody would like it, they could email me, lee@wiskative.org, and we could share their form that you could adapt. We'd be happy to do that. If someone wants to, if you just, you can put in the subject line Dawn's intake form, and we'd be happy to share that with you.
And if you feel like it would be helpful to have, you know, if you're worried about talking about leadership in your agency or if, like, we really have to have our board involved with this to make this change, Lee and I are welcome to sit with your board members and your agency leadership to have these conversations about why this is really, really important.
So, again, if you want to see Dawn's intake form, please send an email to me, Lee, L-E-I-G-H. It's going to be on a later slide. And you could just put in the subject line, Dawn intake form, and I'd be happy to send that. So let's see. We did talk to you about resources, so we've got them printed here again. Also, we've taken to the Futures Without Violence in their reproductive health initiative specifically because a lot of our work is based on their research. Let's see. A little bit more.
So we have about 6 minutes left. If you have any lingering questions or comments, you can keep putting them in. And then we're going to give you some last minute info.
And last minute instructions. So if you came to this call late, could you please use the chat box to type in your name, your program name and the names of the people who participated in the webinar, because you will get a pop-up survey and then a survey sent to you from ReadyTalk to fill out.
Yeah.
Great, thank you. And there's our information, easy, our first names, and the coalition.
And all of that is also on our website.
Doing a little prompting, a little promo about the Refuse Abuse 5K Run Walk and Yay, our annual conference. And just to let you all know that we're having a bunch of plenary folks from Move to End Violence come in this year only. We got a little grant to bring them in. About, let's see, I think it's 7 different people that are coming. So we're hope to take a look at our website and take a look at what's happening. It looks like we've got a hand raised. Okay.
So I'm going to figure out if I can. Okay. So the person with your hand raised, I think you might, I don't know if you're on the phone. I don't know.
If you just push star 7, Estella, you could ask a question. That will unmute you.
Star 7.
Yes, push star asterisk number 7.
If you want to unmute.
And then you can talk. Are you still there, Estrelita?
Or if you want to put a comment in the box, we can also address your question. Anything else you want to say about conference?
So anyway, we hope you all sign up for the conference. Come to Yakima. Oh, we're also going to celebrate the passage of AWA. We're going to have kind of like a progressive party during the conference. So it should be a lot of fun.
Upcoming events for WICSAP, we have both Advocate Corps and Therapist Corps coming up next month. It's on the training page of our website. So if you have new folks that need to have their core covered, we're doing that in July. We're also doing 3 advocate cores this year. So we're adding one more to our schedule to hopefully meet program members' needs a little bit better.
Okay, so we're wrapping up. Any last questions? You can either push star 7 to unmute yourself or put something in the chat box. Okay, well, looks like no one has any questions. Great. Do we have someone speaking?
Did you unmute yourself, somebody? Okay.
All right.
If you guys need anything, our contact information was there. No, double click that. And just get a hold of us if you need anything. The question was, will we receive training certificates for today?
We don't send out training assistance certificates, but if you're a WISCATIV member, we will be tracking your training hours for you.
And for WICSAP, we have folks track their own hours, but if there needs to be any proof that you were at a training, we can also send you something.
So if you're a WISCATIV member, if you send an email to Marie, M-A-R-I-E, at WISCATIV.org, that was back in the beginning, you can see it right here. She will help you log your training hours. And Leah said if you send her an email, she can send you something.
Yeah. So we'll send these slides out to everybody. Also, this webinar is recorded and will be on our website hopefully by next week. And if you need that video, it's on YouTube, so just search emergency contraception. And I think that's it. Thank you all so much for being here. And we're going to stop this recording now, and we're going to end the recording 1 minute early.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please stand by.